Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
Welcome back to the Disruption Zone. I'm Leland Conway along with Cameron Mills. And last episode, we talked to Congressman Thomas Massie, who had figured out how to power his entire 4,000-square-foot house off of a single Tesla car battery, and we enjoyed the fact that a congressman has a porta potty.
Right. We didn't dive into that in too great a detail, but and you make it sound like he's forced into this position.
Right, yeah.
That's the best part of the story. He's hopeful. He wants to be without electricity so he can use his battery in his Tesla.
Exactly. And we want to welcome in our next guest because, as you know, what we are doing here is talking to people who overcome great challenges, who think outside the box, who disrupt the working patterns that are around them. And so I want to welcome in Dana Lyons, who's a friend going back a long ways. And she's one of the strongest people I know, honestly, in the world. She's been in the United States Air Force. How long have you been in the Air Force?
It was 11. I actually just got out 7 months ago.
Wow. And, but you're still coaching for the Air Force, so you're still kind of connected to
Very much so.
Well, Dana, it's great to see you. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
I think we just want to start with your story, because your story is amazing.
It gets pretty good pretty quick.
Yeah, it kind of does. Where do you want to go? Do you want to start with...
Let's go back to your birth.
Let's go back to the birth.
Tell us about that.
So June 5th.
Yeah, there we go.
All right, you're from Lexington, right?
Right.
I am born and raised in Lexington.
All right, so we can probably skip maybe your first 15 years. So just growing up in Lexington and...
Well, hold on. She wanted to be a basketball player like you. Didn't you?
Oh,
I was actually number 21. That was my number.
No way.
That's the number. I mean, is there another one?
There was none.
So, but you ended up in another sport altogether.
I did. So, grew up playing basketball. Didn't know any different from Kentucky, right? I went to the Air Force Academy to play basketball, and that's just why I went to the Air Force Academy. My dad said, "Oh, you're going to sign your life away for 9 years," and I said, "No, I'm going to go play basketball." And so, very quick shift in focus once you get to basic training. Let's just call that a disruption zone for a Division I basketball player.
So it's like those of us who are student athletes, we tell everyone, no, we really are athletes. The student, leave that out of it. You honestly can say, no, it wasn't even athlete. I was soldier. I guess soldier's army, but cadet.
Yeah, I was cadet. Right.
Yeah, cadet first, and then
I was cadet, then student, then if you had time, you can be an athlete. So I think I carried a minimum of 18 credit hours of all STEM classes.
Wow.
That all right. Sounds like self-punishment.
It kind of does. Yeah, it kind of does. And then did all the training and then did all the drills.
So you play high school, but it was just basketball. Because you don't grow up in Kentucky learning how to throw the javelin. That's not something like we have an expertise in.
Never heard of it
before. Right. Okay, see, and that's to me the crazy part about a lot of this. There's a lot of stuff in here that I don't know if crazy is the right word, but that I didn't know that. I kind of thought maybe you had dabbled in it. Maybe you had at least a track and field athlete, and this was one of your events, and then you had to specialize. But no, had never thrown until you got to the Air Force.
How did you discover that you could throw a javelin? Because I know both Cameron and I know your dad pretty well.
Right.
And I've thrown a few things at him when he's been training me in the gym. Is that how it happened? I mean, did you just grab a pole and, I'm really good at that?
I threw shot put and discus in high school, so I was familiar with the world of track and field. But again, in Kentucky, we don't throw the javelin.
Right.
So when I got to the academy, crazy how it works, but all of the Division I coaches at the academy, with the exception of the quote-unquote premier sports, are instructors of PE as well. So we teach in the morning, we coach in the afternoon. Well, my brother's PE teacher was the throws coach. And so my brother said, "Hey, my sister's coming here to play basketball. Oh, she's got a tower over you, you little midget. And if she's the athlete you say she is, I'll let her try the javelin." So he called me and said, "You want to throw the javelin?" I said, "I don't even know what it is, but I'm going there to play basketball."
And need something else, obviously, to fill your schedule.
I love people that do that, too. It's like, can you do this? I have no idea what you're talking about, but I'll try.
Right.
The only thing I can think of that's comparable is track and field is we didn't have any 300-meter hurdlers sophomore year. And I mean, literally, because no one goes out for the 300-meter hurdles.
Right.
That's a brutal race.
Thank you. Leland.
God bless them.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing.
I'm just,
why are you looking at me like I'm disagreeing?
I'm trying to tell you how hard, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. And I was just doing it to get in shape.
Right.
It's like, no, we need someone to do this race.
Yeah.
Finished seventh in my first heat and I was done.
I had no idea that Cameron did hurdles.
I don't know that I did. because when you hurdle a hurdle, you hurdle. You don't jump it. That's right.
I wish YouTube was available back when that.
That's awesome.
Wouldn't that be great? So you actually, and this is one of the interesting parts of your story, is that you almost went to the Olympics. You competed on an international level, the Pan Am Games,
World Championships,
and you almost went to the Olympics. By how close?
2 inches. You're talking.
How did that feel at the time?
Well, coming off of a 2005 and 2006 NCAA championship title, and then 2007 when I won USA championships, I'm like, let's go. Like, I'm primed. I'm ready. I haven't thrown the qualifying distance. 196 feet, 6 inches was my farthest at the time. I needed 198.6. I threw 199.2.
Hold on a second.
That just sounds so easy
you
to
can
get that
throw a
two.
Spear 200 feet.
Well, if I did throw 200 feet, I would have been an Olympian.
Right, okay.
Thank you.
that tells you.
196
Thank
feet.
You. Yes.
You can throw a spear 196
I
feet.
Can, yeah.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, and I'm pretty accurate
could maybe
at 30
hit that
meters.
Window over there.
You're pretty accurate.
At about 30 meters.
But not 100, not 200.
Mm-mm, no, okay. You just
so now we know to stay 30 meters
that
away.
Go anywhere.
Yeah, so let's go hunting.
Meters away from Dana.
Plot twist, hunting would be great.
Yeah, no kidding.
While I still have an arm.
So within 2 inches. Mm-hmm. And you, like you said, you had just won a national championship in the NCAA.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you probably felt pretty confident going into that.
I did.
What did that feel like?
I did. It was crushing at the time. I mean, you train. The Air Force entrusted me to train as a world-class athlete. So that was my first assignment when I graduated from the academy. And to feel like I failed them, but at the same time failed myself, coming that close but still not making it happen, was crushing at the time.
Right.
But in sport, you learn, you know, failure, and you pick yourself back up, and you go at it again. And so problem is I had 4 years to wait to try again.
Right, those Olympics are every 4 years.
Yeah.
That's tough. I mean, you know, think about it. Cause
thinking about it.
Well, your national championships are when you compete in NCAA, it's every year.
Right.
I mean, look, there are some sports where you have an instant chance, an instant opportunity to redo.
To redo.
And basketball is one of those sports.
So what do you do when you miss by 2 inches and you have 4 years to think about it?
Well, immediately I said, because Dan O'Brien, right, the well-known.
He's on a Wheaties box.
He is on a Wheaties box. Yeah. He threw the javelin pretty well, too, even as a decathlete. He said, well, what's next? I said, well, I guess I'm going to go put on the uniform and serve my country for the next couple of years until I get the opportunity to try again. So I went off and got married and became an acquisitions officer, a modernization sustainment program manager for the next 2 years in Utah.
Okay. And then your story gets even more interesting because as an athlete, you're now coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to come back to that and how you bring the experiences in your life to coaching today. But you, as you said, you got married, and your husband, Dave Lyons, you guys were both deployed to Afghanistan at the same time
mm-hmm.
when he passed away. Can you tell us a little bit of that story?
Yeah. So he, after my 2012 run at the Olympic trials again. I'd pretty much retired at that point. And he said, all right, well, I'm going to go volunteer for a 365-day deployment because I work in the installation deployment readiness center. I deploy people every day, and I've not done it myself. So how am I supposed to lead them if I've never been in their shoes and had to leave my family and go through some of those tough things? So he volunteered. And about a month after he left, I got tasked. And so we ended up in Afghanistan at the same time, both in Kabul, Afghanistan. And I was overseeing programs and making sure that our troops got what they needed for base life support and contracts. So he came through my base for supplies one day. It was Christmas because that was the day that I kind of got off. He didn't have any days off. So we spent Christmas together in 2013. I left the day after on the 26th, and then he was supposed to catch a helicopter on the 27th back to his base, which was just about a 7-minute helicopter ride. And come to find out, he didn't end up taking a helicopter ride and was in a convoy, and someone blew the intel mission. And I found out, or was, I guess something went wrong, and I knew something was wrong. And so I went to the command section. I said, what happened? I said, what's going on? Where's my husband? And they took my weapon and they took my multi-tool. And just like you'd seen on any Hollywood movie, the commander and first sergeant and chaplain say, you know, Captain Lyon, on behalf of the United States and Department of Defense, I'm sorry to inform you, your husband's been killed.
Gosh.
Wow.
And my world just was rocked, and it kind of stopped, and you're paralyzed, and like, what do you do, and where do you go, and what else do you have? At least for me as an athlete, you know, I had always had that pick yourself back up and try again and no quit. Parents never let us quit in anything. And from a faith perspective, either God is good and God is sovereign, mm-hmm. or this slipped through the cracks, which would be devastating for us all,
right.
if he missed this one. And so obviously he ordained it, and he was going to pull us through. And so if he was who he says he was, then that's kind of where, I didn't know where else to go at that point.
That's pretty amazing.
You said the moment you found out when you were, I guess, presented, because at a funeral, you know, they give you the flag, and that's mm-hmm. what you just said. But you said, what do I do next? What did you do next for the next 3-4 days? I mean, what did you do?
So I was in Afghanistan, and it took them 6 hours to notify his parents. They wouldn't notify my parents, so I had to wait 6 hours to notify my parents. And so the next person that walks into, or I guess a couple people later that walk into the room before I had called my parents, said, all right, where are we burying him? Where are we taking him?
Oh, wow.
So I'm planning a funeral for my husband before his parents or even my parents know, while I'm on the other side of the world and no one that I know or care or loves or cares for me is around. And so I think you kind of just go into execution mode. I mean, I think the military teaches you a lot of that. And as an athlete, you know, it's kind of like you made it a turnover and you got to get it the steal back the next time, you know, like,
yeah.
So you don't have an option to sit there and sulk. So I remember I said that we would bury him at the Air Force Academy, and they said, all right, we're going to go through Dover. So when you talk to your parents, tell them they need to be in Dover at such and such a date. And then I paid our bills, because I wasn't going to get his paycheck 3 days later. Okay. So while we still had money in the account, I paid our bills while I was waiting to call my parents. And I got to bring him back on the flight, which I think I'm one of, if not the only, active duty spouse that's ever brought their deceased spouse back. So I flew back with him.
Did that help?
Mm. Oh, I don't think I would have had it any other way. I don't know that I knew that at the time.
Right.
But I 100% think that that's exactly how I thought my deployment was a joke, if I'm being honest.
What do you mean?
There's all kinds of corruption over there, okay. In the way that we could go down that road on a whole other like.
So it's up to Leland.
Right.
I want to go back to something a few minutes ago, and I don't mean to interrupt, but when you all were there together, mm-hmm. okay, when you set a 7-minute helicopter ride apart in Kabul, but two different bases.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever see each other?
Just that day.
That day. That's you kind of indicated that Christmas Day, and that was the only day, even though you're deployed, you're married, but you never got to see each other.
Mm-hmm.
And how long?
Well, he left for training in September of 2012. I think he came back for about a month, and then he deployed in February of 2013. And then his R&R, we had 2 weeks halfway through his deployment where he came back to Colorado, but my deployment happened in the middle of his R&R, so we got about 8 days together. So he deployed me.
Wow.
I think that he really appreciated being able to do that instead of me having to do that on my own.
Yeah.
So, and then Christmas Eve and...
So you got like a total of what, like 21 days in a year together.
Yeah, but we spent our first year and a half 300 miles away too. So, I mean, right. We didn't have a whole lot of our marriage where we under the same...
Yeah.
For did same roof.
It, in terms of just kind of going back to what you were asking, do you think you feel like God gave you that Christmas?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I honestly like dealt with some of that like survivor's guilt, if you were, or guilt for the fact that he came to see me and he got killed leaving my base.
Wow.
You know, like you can imagine what that's like. Well, if he didn't like come to, I mean, granted, he had $80,000 worth of weapons and, you know, equipment and supply that he had to pick up.
Right.
He just conveniently came and picked it up on Christmas when I had the day off.
Right.
Because he had been at my base a couple times and I had been on mission.
But
and
you
so,
had to work through all that in your head.
Oh, counseling is...
So fast forward now a little bit, and now you're coaching back at Air Force Academy.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got all of these, because, I mean, you've had enormous success in your life. And you've had enormous grief.
Mm-hmm.
And you've had enormous failure by 2 inches. So you bring all that together.
Mm-hmm.
How do you work that into preparing your kids, your athletes, for their future, whether it's in the military or whether it's just in civilian life or whatever?
Yeah. So I believe that just in life, like your character is the sum total of all the experiences and situations and trials and challenges that you've had to face.
Right.
And so how do you get through those? But I think you have to have a mindset of perseverance, for one. And I think that that's a choice. So we all have an opportunity and choices every day to wake up and decide if we're going to do something for the day, or if you're going to make excuses for whatever life has thrown at you. So, you know, addict, victim mentality, or, you know, failure, or you didn't have this, or you had this, and you make it, it doesn't matter. Like, you're still faced with a choice every day to do something better for yourself or for somebody else, to make your life better. And so same thing goes in coaching and in being an athlete. It was coaching to me in some ways is no different than being an athlete, in that you're trying to create these patterns of behavior so that you can improve your character, or you can improve your technique, and you can have the transfer in your sport. Or what our athletes, you know, our mission at the Air Force Academy is to train and inspire leaders of character through resiliency and championship competition. So, like, what else do you do? But you throw challenges and struggles at them. For struggles, right? Produce perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope. And that's kind of where the resiliency piece comes in, of being able to connect all those dots. And I don't think that I would have ever connected those dots had I not lost Dave, and been in that season of saying, like, where have you been, or why this, or how, or people say you're so strong. I don't know why I'm strong. I don't have any other choice. What other choices do I have? I mean, I'm still alive, and I don't really believe in being able to take my own life as much as I'd rather be done, if right. I'm being honest. Yeah. Right. So, I mean, I've been through those darkest days. And so, inspiring other people, and you go back to, how did you get involved in the javelin? The coach saw an athlete with an arm and a lot of passion.
Right.
And my first meet was embarrassing. I threw 117 feet. So I got to 196. My first meet, 117 feet, which I can throw with my left arm now. Right. So not impressive. He's sitting here saying, she's going to be an All-American. And I'm like, I'm about to quit this thing. I came here to play basketball. And right. believed in me.
Whatever happened to basketball?
Am I allowed to say? Like, I hated the game.
Open arms.
It became a job. I mean, why this person, you know, recruited me, but then told me how I had to, like, hold the ball and dribble and shoot my free throws. And it's like, right. It's different than, like, learning plays. Like, you thought, well, no, we're all better athletes. And it literally took the joy out of basketball for me.
But not, that wasn't something specific to an Air Force Academy coach. That was that.
Oh,
coach.
No, it was.
Was it really? Even a javelin coach?
On no. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Correct.
So that was just, he recruited you, wanted you to play for him, and immediately is going to change the way you play.
Totally. I'm like, why'd you recruit me in the first place?
Yeah. and we're talking, like, basic fundamentals. Like,
basic fundamentals.
Shooting. To be fair, Coach P worked on Wayne's shooting for him for quite a few years.
Well, hold on a second. It's experiences like that, though, where you as a coach incorporate, man, I remember this one coach that was horrible. You know what I mean?
Right.
And you know what I'm saying?
A lot of horrible coaches.
Well, yeah, but you incorporate insane, that, right? And you say, this is how I'm not going to do it. So mm-hmm. So what did you change from that experience? Okay, you changed sports, and now you're coaching these athletes, and you have the experience of having been in a coach that drove you out of a sport.
Mm. Right. So I felt like that coach, like, limited me, that shut me down, stuffed me out, wanted me to become whatever they wanted me to become. And you go to track and field, or I went in the javelin, and I had a coach that said, do you believe in a guy that can move mountains? And when you're sitting there in Colorado Springs, and the mountains are right there, and he's like, he can tell him to go from this side of the interstate to that side of the interstate. And I'm like, I don't even know what that means, but it was so inspiring. There was inspiring about basketball. You'll appreciate this from Kentucky. I got kicked out of practice one day at the Air Force Academy because I said, let's go Lady Falcons. And there was so much.
Was it the Falcons that insulted them, or the ladies?
Lady part. Yeah. So it was such feminist degrading to a women's basketball program. I'm sorry, Lady Vols. Right? So I got kicked out of practice because I said, let's go Lady Falcons, and that was degrading
to
our team.
I'm not getting in this conversation.
You what?
I'm not getting in this part of the
Why
conversation.
Why not?
Let Dana speak for herself. I like it. I like what she's doing.
I mean, it was just,
I think she's awesome.
It was just limiting and degrading, and, you know, like, trying to, like, put you in a box, and, like, track and field's like, it's limitless. Like, however much work you want to put into this is going to determine how good you're going to be.
Right.
And so I ran sideways to school to try to figure out how to do crossovers down the road. You run forward and then you turn sideways.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So I would skip the class sideways.
So, all right. So
you guys got a visual.
The visual's awesome. Because if you're just driving and you see somebody running like that, you're like, what in the world?
Yeah.
All right, so would you rather coach an underdog? Or would you rather coach somebody, you know, like, would you rather coach somebody with less talent but more passion?
Yes. They will find a way.
I like the other part of that, to where I thought you were going, Leland, was I like the way you – would you rather coach an underdog or a favorite?
Well, that's where I
was. Yeah, I know, but I just, when you said that, I was like, oh, wow.
It depends on their passion.
Yeah, okay.
I'll coach the best to make you better if you want to work.
Right.
But if you want to make excuses or say it's good enough that I'm such
a... So being an underdog is irrelevant.
Totally. Passion. Or willingness to, like, be coached.
Yeah.
Change, challenge, become victorious.
If we take anything out of this entire conversation, it's being an underdog is irrelevant.
Well, okay, I disagree.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, because here's the thing.
And so it begins.
Yeah. We're going to go for 2 hours here, I'm sure. But if the underdog has a chip, and that's what's going to lead them to willing to work. Because if they're the underdog and they know it, they'll work. If they don't know it, then they're not really the underdog in my book.
Well,
see, the underdog to me.
Yeah, but when I say an underdog, I'd be an underdog that knows it. I mean, Dana, you talk about that passion, a 5'2" basketball player.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
I mean, when I say underdog, I mean somebody that has that chip on their shoulder. I'm not going to accept
right.
that the experts don't believe I can do this.
Right.
If you,
but then
if
what do you
accept
say
when, that the experts don't believe you can do it, then screw you. Get out of the competition.
There are no experts. Let's just throw that out. But when it comes to this kind of thing, nobody really knows what a kid has in their heart and how much talent they've got.
But like, what do you say, was I an underdog after I won my first national championship
nope.
or my second national championship?
You were still 5'2".
So to me, that's where I'm almost with him to say, is it the underdog or is it the passion? Because now you got to come back and have to fight harder and work harder to stay the favorite or stay on top right. or to continue to improve. And every year I improved, even the year that I missed the team by 2 inches.
Right.
Right? Right. But I didn't improve by enough.
Yeah. Fascinating.
You said something a little while ago when you were talking about that specific part. You said you felt like you let down, I don't know if you said country, you said the Air Force.
The Air Force had given me.
Yeah. I mean, and then even Dave, you know, I guess the day he lost his life, he felt like this deployment, that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm supposed to do this. I've never done it. No, this is my job. I've got to go serve before I can lead.
Mm-hmm.
So both of you have that something entwined in you.
Mm-hmm.
But what when you say you felt guilty, you felt like you let down, because look, we've got a group of guys right now that are down at Wildcat Lodge that I'm betting on some level are feeling they disappointed their family, the fans, their coaching staff, maybe themselves, and hopefully just themselves, because that can do amazing things. What was that feeling like for you? I mean, what did you really feel like? Who did you let down?
I mean, I think ultimately myself. I think in the big picture, the Air Force gave me 2 years to make the Olympic team, and that was my mission. And so in the Air Force, you're trained to complete a mission. So if you don't complete the mission, there's a failure. But you know, I don't think I let the Air Force down. There's still quite a few people that were pretty proud of how far that I, you know, had come and how I handled myself in the defeat, and that, you know, like graceful in the victory, you know, act like you've done it before, but then also right. in the defeat. And it's because some people would say, you know, well, Dana is still our most competitive and our, you know, our most consistent JAFTA, or she should. I mean, there were people that were still trying to fight to get me on the Olympic team because I was having such a great year. But at the end of the day, I didn't make the qualifying standard.
Right.
Right. And
so you're probably sitting there thinking that I don't deserve it. I mean, I just what I know from you so far, which is not much other than what your dad has told me over the years,
mm-hmm.
is that you're sitting there saying, guys, no, I don't deserve it. I didn't. Like, it's just the qualifying standard. Okay. What other sport other than like track
and field? That's what I love about track and field.
Standard, yeah.
Right.
Either you're good or you're not.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the part about recruiting. Like, right. if you're not throwing far, God bless you. Get into the academy yourself.
Right. Right.
Learn to throw something far.
Right.
So I have to have a little bit of like judgment there. So I need an athlete with an arm that wants to win.
Is it hard to innovate in the military?
It can be. I think that's honestly part of why I got out of the military. Due in part because they wanted me back in the Air Force, or the acquisition, you know, real quote unquote Air Force, and stopped coaching at the academy. So I was a coach for 3 years after Dave was killed. Before I got out of the Air Force, because they said, oh, well, you've had 3 years and you need to go back to real work and stop being a coach. But at the same time, you know, you've got cadets that are asking you all the time, can you please commission me? Can you come talk to our squadron? You've got a story. You're making an impact. You inspire us. And that's encouraging to my heart, too, because, you know, there's a lot of times, every night when I go home by myself, you're like,
yeah,
what is this all for? You know, like at the end of the day, like it's still just me. And so I get up every day like wanting to be a better version of myself and wanting to inspire other people, because that fills my cup.
And you've done that. This is the thing. You're here in Lexington today because you spoke to a prayer breakfast this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And how often are you giving, you know, how often are you talking to people? Is it a fairly regular basis? Because I know that seems to be what you've converted your mission to in life.
Yeah, I don't know that I could say it's like regular. but it does happen often. I don't know that there's like a once a month or
people
once a week.
People gravitate to you though because they know your story.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think I end up doing it in my day-to-day life.
Yeah.
So, I mean, when I teach PE class and we talk about physical fitness and physical development, we talk about creating patterns of behavior, of neuromuscular facilitation movement patterns to teach the hamstrings how to engage in the descent of a squat so that now your body is protected when you're jumping or when you land playing basketball or cutting playing soccer to protect yourself from injury, which is essentially the body's failure.
Right.
And so when you talk about creating patterns of behavior so it transfers into the competition, your body now reduces the risk of injury. And so you reduce the risk of the impact of whatever you face, whether it's in sport or in life, you've set yourself up to have the tools to overcome. Does that mean that you've prepared for losing your spouse? No, you can never prepare for losing your spouse. I mean, I guess if they're sick with cancer, but even then, like, yeah, it's looming, but until it happens, you don't know how it's going to hit you.
Yeah,
you don't know if you're going to be relieved or you're going to feel guilty. I don't know.
Right.
But I don't know.
But you do know.
I do.
You do now.
I do now.
Right. Where do you think? I kind of love how we're weaving in the whole, you know, the challenges of life, but with also the sports aspect of this. Where's the innovation in coaching right now, especially in your field? Where's the disruption?
On the technique side, there's only 15 states in the country that actually throw the javelin. Out of the eight guys that throw the javelin, or eight athletes that throw the javelin on my team right now, it's probably 11. Heptathletes, multi-event, I have six jab throw. I have one guy that's ever thrown the javelin before he came to the academy. So if you can't connect the dots of how to have an overarm thrower, turn him, run sideways. I got 290-mile-an-hour pitchers that got cut because they couldn't hit a strike zone. I said, my strike zone's 30 degrees, and it gets bigger the farther you throw. Well, this kid goes in our first practice meet and throws what's top four in the conference and training for four. But you have to be able to convert his mindset of how many years of pitching to now you have to throw with your legs and you don't have a hill to run down and there's not a ball coming back at your face.
And your release point is different.
You're not pulling down. You're throwing through, right?
Yeah. And the ball's really sharp now. On one.
Yes. And it's got 7 feet of drag, which is the issue.
Wow.
So if they don't convert their body, so that drag, if they don't throw through a point, your elbow, your shoulder, your back, your hip will absorb.
Right.
And then that's...
That's the number one injury, too.
Elbow. It's UCL is the ACL in your... UCL and your elbow is the ACL in your knee.
Have you had to come back from injury?
I actually have a torn labrum that I never got fixed.
Really?
So going into Pan Am Games, I had Pan Ams and Worlds in 2007. I had a sharp pain on the front side of my shoulder. So after I won USA's, and it wasn't a one-time thing, it was a wear and tear, but I have a labral tear. And so you start to talk to the doctors and the experts, and if they were to go in there and fix it, I'd lose all the range of motion. So I wouldn't lose my power, but I wouldn't be able to get my arm back.
So fixing it wouldn't fix it.
So fixing it...
Sounds like it would hurt it.
...would probably end my javelin career and ability. And with the Olympic trials coming in the next year, and I'm the favorite, you don't go get your shoulder fixed. And so what do? You innovate. You learn. So what actually... I mean, John Elway played the last Super Bowl with a torn ACL.
That's right.
So you don't need your ligaments. I mean, you do. But if your muscles are strong enough, right, and they can support and hold those joints in place, the ligaments are kind of your guardrails on the road. Your muscles are your ability to steer and control those movements.
So you just got stronger.
Yeah, I had to.
Right.
You learn. So here's something that we coach, especially in the javelin and in the overhead throwing events, but really in strength and conditioning as well. But your body only allows itself to accelerate to the extent that it can safely decelerate. So it's got this protective measure on it. So when you go to throw the javelin, if you aren't able to stop your arm once you throw that arm as far...
Then you can't throw any farther.
Well, then your body goes in this protective mode, and it wants to slow the arm down.
Right.
So instead of trying to get a faster arm speed, you increase the body's ability to decelerate more correctly.
Okay.
Right? So in basketball and in soccer...
That sounds so technical.
Yeah. I know, but it's fascinating.
In basketball and soccer, you train your hamstrings. You don't train your quads. You train the hamstrings. Your hamstrings are the decelerator for your knee.
Right.
right? And if your hamstrings aren't developed and you come down and get hit and your hamstrings can't contract, there goes your ACL. Okay. If your hamstrings are working, your ACL is not getting strained and stressed.
I have two more questions for you. My first one, and then whatever Cameron has here.
I just want to keep talking.
Well, my first one is whether or not any of what you just told us would have helped Cameron play better defense. Dude,
that was coming on some level.
Why? What?
When you can shoot the three like us, though, number 21, we don't need to be playing defense.
I don't know if you had this issue. I was told my problem was all mental. Wasn't any of my physical abilities. It was heart and soul. That's what it was.
Shooting the threes, right?
I have one more question to kind of wrap it up, but yeah. I just wanted to see. Okay, because...
There's a thousand things that come to mind. I don't know that I can articulate any of them
right
now.
One of those conversations you want to keep going all day, and I know they don't have it.
You said it earlier. This is what it comes out in conversation with you. It has to all day, and because the moment, I undoubtedly you have other things that make you interesting, Dana. But when someone hears she threw javelin for the Air Force Academy, well, I mean that's uncommon here,
right?
So that invites 25 questions immediately, just in a casual conversation, and that's where you get to. And that's I love the way you talk because everything is so precise.
Yeah,
you know everything. You've got your language down. You've got your message down, and it just you deliver it like you're in the armed forces. Really, what I'm thinking.
But
that's important because you have a message on some level, whether it's your faith, whether it's overcoming adversity, which doesn't necessarily have to involve your faith, but in your case, it gloriously does. A lot of times, you have a minute and 2 minutes with someone, and you've got something that I think what you shared with us is I've got to share it. There's no point in going through this if I don't see it helps somebody on the other side.
Right. I think you can't waste the suffering. Mm. There's so much beauty in the brokenness, and the brokenness has to happen. Let's just think about feeding the 5,000, right? He had, what, 5 fish and 7 loaves, or I don't know my math or whatever. Yeah. But he didn't have enough food to feed that many people, but he broke it, and he blessed others. He took from a kid and blessed you know what I mean? So, the sacrifices, and then if you sit there and life is over as you know it, then life is not meant to be survived. You're in a survival mentality. And I'd love to sit here and say that for 4 years I've been this strong. No, but I've had my days, and shoot, his birthday's coming up and our anniversary's coming up. And then, you know what I mean? It's like those days happen, but that's where community comes involved and all that kind of stuff. And you can keep going, but life is meant to be lived and not survived. And that's where I go back to you have a choice to do something. And so I think we're all called for so much greater than most of us ever realize or dare to achieve, because we're scared of failure.
Right.
And if you don't face that, and I don't know that I necessarily faced it on my own account, right? I mean, maybe I could have gotten to this end without having lose my husband, but I didn't get that opportunity. And so when you're teaching cadets that very well, could have their name on the wall, on the wall of honor, the fallen, or they know somebody that's going to be in that. It's going to happen. I'm sorry. We've been in contingency efforts for, 17 years now?
Yeah.
And so you don't have a choice, at least from where I stand. So why waste it?
And take it outside of the military. Ultimately, we're all going to face death. We're going to face the death of friends and family. We're going to face other things before that. Adversity just happens. That's life, what you said.
Well, that's the only thing that we're guaranteed in this life is suffering.
But what I love about what you said was don't waste it. Because everything, so let's end this with this.
It's a growth mentality.
Yeah.
You have to. My favorite part, sorry.
No, go ahead.
My favorite part about throwing the javelin was not just the winning. The winning was fun.
Right.
And some people would win, and, people that weren't cadet athletes, cadet student athletes, could go out and party, right?
Right.
My favorite thing to do was to go watch film, even on a PR day, and be like, I can fix this, I can fix this, I can fix that. I can still get better.
Teacher's pet nerd.
I wasn't though. I was a punk. I was a punk when I was young.
How does that work with that sort of dedication to the craft?
Well, I think it's
how are you punk on one side, but
I was
student of the game.
I was humbled, right? So the transition from a faith perspective that happened from basketball to track was my brother gave me a quote that's kind of birthed out of Philippians 1:6. But the quote says, "To achieve beyond your ability, you must believe in a power beyond yourself." When you realize that God wants to bless you and use you, and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him, all psychological limits vanish and you are free to achieve. And so when basketball stopped, when I hated basketball because basketball was about me, and when sports stopped being about me, and when I realized life was not about me, and things that I loved of athletics and all the like the experiences that I had were about to be over if I don't change who I was. If you can't have that humility and be grateful for the gift that you have,
right,
then it is all gone and it is all lost. So that was the punk Dana turned into, like, man, I get an opportunity to worship God in in athletics.
In Colorado Springs, which isn't a bad place to live.
It's no, so I believe that God is omnipresent. He's everywhere, but he lives in Colorado.
That's
based on the number of enormous ministries that are based in Colorado Springs, yeah, specifically, I believe.
That's probably true.
Like it's the Jerusalem of American ministry.
Yeah, exactly. So kind of wrapping all this in one final moment, we've talked a lot about the challenges that you faced in overcoming, but what's the greatest victory?
I think realizing that there's victory in the defeat, right? There's something greater to grasp, because all of like the championships are fleeting. Like all that stuff is laughable, like the wins and the losses when you consider losing Dave, right?
Yep.
But like to recognize that life is not about me, there's more to give. So it's not like a one moment thing. It's like that life transformation that now, like, whether I like it or not, I have a story and I can connect and engage with people. And so when someone wants to give up or someone wants an opportunity or what have you, you can find a way to get to know that person, invest in that life, and help them realize that they're made for so much more. But I wouldn't have gotten to that place if, you know, I hadn't had my failures. And that first failure, I think, was that piss poor attitude at the end of the bench playing basketball.
Right. I love it.
Which is self-inflicted.
There's so many lines in this that are going up on my wall.
Have fun editing this.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. Yeah. So, listen, Dana, thank you so much. First of all, thank you and David for your service to our country.